In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
Pelican Brewing presents the Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague hit the big stories you've heard about. And some you haven't.
How'd you do that? Actually, I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague is poured by Pelican Brewing. Soak in the sunshine with the return of Pelican's seasonal beer, Pelicano. Available in clear glass bottles for refreshment you can see.
All right, Daily Ticker time on a Tuesday, brought to you, as always, by our wonderful friends at Pelican Brewing Company. They invite you to take a beach break at one of their four coastal locations, Cana Beach, Tillamook, Pacific City, and the newest location on the south end of Lincoln City, overlooking Siletz Bay. Pelican Brewing Company, born at the beach. Lots to talk about with our guest today. Joining us now, the columnist of the Oregonian, our good buddy, Bill Orme. You can follow him on Twitter, at Bill Orme. He's also on Blue Sky as well. Bill, good morning to you. We all waited with bated breath. What's going to happen? NBA draft lottery night. Where do the Blazers fall? They slip to 11. The reaction from the columnist.
The day yesterday on the Columbia River, trying to catch a salmon, and my success was basically like the Blazers' success in the lottery. Totally skunked. No fish in the river. Bitterly disappointing. My reaction, I think, is probably a little more overarching about kind of the state of the lottery and the notion of building through the draft in the NBA, which is really the only tool that like a third of the NBA has for building a for building a winning team. But you know, from the Blazers' standpoint, I really think that the lottery sort of validated their approach to the season, which was not, you know, going all out for lottery for ping pong balls in the lottery, because you saw what happened to the three teams that tanked the most aggressively and had the worst records in the league. Utah's picking fifth, Washington's picking sixth, Charlotte's picking fourth. You know, those teams did not put their fan bases through those terrible seasons, you know, for those results. And I don't know where those franchises go from here, because can they really put their fans through another, you know, aggressively tanking season after they saw that it doesn't necessarily pay dividends. So I think from that standpoint, it was a really interesting lottery. From the Blazers standpoint, I mean, look, you went into it knowing there was a really good chance they were going to have the 10th pick. You know, the 11th was in play. So I think from the Blazers standpoint, it's only really disappointing relative to how much movement there was around them. The fact that it was a team that was behind them that jumped up to number one, that all three of the tanking teams were displaced. Like, it created real opportunity for the Blazers, and they just didn't get as lucky. I think that's the disappointment. But I really do wonder where they go from here, because their tools for adding, you know, real high level impact players are just pretty minimal at this point.
I hear your point. We've been talking about this all day, because I've heard that a lot of, like, see, tanking doesn't work because of where the absolute bottom feeders ended up. I would still argue Portland would rather have the fourth pick than the 11th pick, so maybe Charlotte finds VJ Edgecombe, becomes the next dude for them, and we'll get Derek Queen or whoever the hell they end up getting at 11. Also, like, two games worse than the Spurs. You couldn't have just sat at the last eight games of the season and you'd have got the second pick. I don't think today is a day where we say tanking doesn't work, because there's different versions of tanking. This franchise tanked last year, they tanked the year before, and they tanked the year before that. This draft's deeper, and they decided that they didn't want to do that anymore, and I still find that wild.
Well, I think that, you know, tanking, I think the most important thing you said there is that tanking looks a lot different in different ways. Yeah. And, you know, look at what Dallas did. You know, Dallas made the decision institutionally that being, you know, the fifth or sixth seed in the West wasn't that important, and traded Luka Doncic. At one point, lost 9 out of 11 games. They lost something like 6 of their last 9 going into the postseason. So even though they made the play-in, they were not playing for the postseason by the end of the year, and they had obviously some injuries as well. But I think that the real tanking, and probably the smart tanking in the NBA, is to probably be in sort of that in that, you know, 8 through 12 range as a rebuilding team, and try to thread the needle of having pretty decent lottery odds. Because even though, you know, I mean, Dallas still had close to 10% of getting into the top four, and they were able to, you know, play a somewhat credible season and play in the postseason. And I think that probably is where the smart tanking exists. And in a sense, mediocrity is the new tanking in the NBA. And I just don't think that you're going to see with flattened odds at the top and the expansion of the play-in, those two things, I think, have changed the nature of what tanking is. And by the way, you know, if you were to look over the last few years, it's not just this one draft where it hasn't worked out. Where the last three seasons, the number one team has fallen back to fifth. So it's we're starting to get a larger sample size that shows that the pain is not necessarily worth it when it comes to tanking.
Well, but I would say two to that too, because I think it's seven straight years. The stat is the worst team record wise has not gotten the number one pick for seven straight seasons. So that's remarkable. My only counter to that, because it's got to feel awful, right? You're the worst team. Danny Ainge is running Utah. He clearly is a guy that knows how to win, so he's purposely losing, and that fan base doesn't want to watch what they're putting out. I would also say, like, yeah, people don't always want to go to Charlotte or Washington or Utah, but if you're well run, the fifth pick is still valuable. Like, the fact that they can't find players at four and five or six or three, that's an organizational problem. That's not a you're losing games and what is it getting you problem. That's an organizational problem. Oklahoma City is not thriving right now because they've had four number one picks. They made good business decisions. They drafted well where they landed, and they brought in a couple vets. Like, there are ways for tiny markets or irrelevant teams to get out of the bottom. It's just a decision of if they're well run. So, like, Charlotte's the fourth pick. Again, that's terrible luck. They might get the best player in the draft, and if they're smart about how they build, they shouldn't be at the bottom for this long.
I agree with all of that, and I think that I think it is probably on days like this good to remember, like, hey, you know what, you know, the MVP of the league, not a number one pick in the draft. You know, the last, you know, who was the last MVP that was a number one pick in the draft? Devin Booker, not a number one pick. You know, Donovan Mitchell, not a number one pick. These are guys who were found around where the Blazers are picking in this draft. Anthony Simons is a different example of somebody who, hey, late teens, you know, became a kind of cornerstone of the franchise for several years. Like, you can do very, very well if you have good player evaluation and you draft smartly. And I completely agree with that. And I don't think it should be the end all be all. But unfortunately, the way the NBA is currently constructed and the way NBA teams operate, there is an outsized emphasis on the draft and draft order, because a draft pick in the NBA can make a bigger difference than any other, you know, major professional sport. And so teams build their entire strategy around being in the best possible position for the draft. And I just think that is what is probably going to have to change, where it can't just be. And I know these teams that we're talking about, the Charlotte, the Utah, the Washington, you know, Portland as well, you know, they have player evaluation teams, you know, they have scouts. They want to be able to find stars throughout the draft wherever they're picking. So it's not like they are just putting all their eggs in the, hey, let's win the lottery and get this one guy basket, because that's not good business either. But I do think that, like, that is the part that is probably going to be de-emphasized going forward, is that the best path is to get the number one pick or the number two pick, because I think that the math and the reality is showing that it's just not a very not that it was ever, you know, a dependable strategy, but it is far more chaotic than it has been even historically.
Interesting. We're talking with Bill Oram. He is the columnist at the Oregonian, our good buddy, at Bill Oram on Twitter. Give him a follow there. Check out all his great work on OregonLive.com as well. And you hinted at something, Bill, that I think is the big lingering question that I have out of this. Like, I'm not surprised by last night. That's what the odds were saying, that they were going to be right around 10 or 11. We knew that's where they would fall. And they end up with that pick. I think the bigger question that I have, it's almost twofold, is one, where do they go from here, considering the future assets that they have? We act as if they have 17 first-round picks from Milwaukee. It's two. Chicago has the rights, I believe, in the swap from the whatever trade that was years ago, Derek Jones Jr., whoever, for next year. So potentially losing your first-round pick next year and a bunch of assets on your roster that I don't know how much interest there is around the league. And so I guess the first part is just how do they take the next step genuinely, outside of just saying, hey, our superstar's already on the team, when there's not a lot of evidence to actually back that up. And then the follow-up to that is, do they as an organization, and at the end of the day, a business, do they care? Or is 40 wins enough to keep this fan base satisfied, making money, and it's an ownership group that doesn't have a long-term stake?
Oh, are we doing this for the entire hour? We have the whole hour to unpack all of that, because it's there's a lot there, and I'll probably just hang on to the immediate question of the roster, because I think that you're like so right. Like, they have good assets in terms of picks. They do, like the Milwaukee pick, especially the 2029 unprotected pick, really, really valuable. They do have issues with the Chicago pick, but I think the most important thing is that their players are probably not as appealing on the open market to go make a trade as they would like to think they are, because they do not want to include Tumani Kamara and Denny Advia in any kind of deal. They want to bring in a player or players who can either complement them, or, you know, those guys can complement, you know, a star level player. So, you know, is a team willing to trade you an all-star caliber player for a package that is built around Shaedon Sharpe? I don't think so. I don't think there's enough like confidence that we know that what and who Shaedon Sharpe is. A package that has Shaedon Sharpe, Donovan Clingan, and Scoot Henderson, like, that's a lot of like sort of, you know, lottery tickets, in the sense that it's like, hey, maybe collectively that group sort of pans out and gives you something over time. But you're also now trading your last three lottery picks, and probably some picks going forward. That's a ton of capital. I just don't know that the Blazers are in as good of shape to pull off a trade as you would hope. At least not a direct, like, one-to-one, hey, they're going to go trade for, I mean, I'll say Zion Williamson, but, you know, whoever, you know, yeah. Joel Embiid, what Devin Booker, whatever. I don't think that the teams that would be trading you those players are going to see enough value in the current players the Blazers would be trading back. So I do think you're probably going to see more trades that are, you know, along the fringes of things, where, you know, getting involved in a three-team deal, the Milwaukee pick, I mean, there's been some chatter around the idea of the Blazers getting involved in a three-teamer where Milwaukee gets its pick back and the swaps get canceled and the Blazers, you know, siphon off, you know, a young caliber player, and for the Bucks, it's more about, you know, assets. Something like that makes sense. Like, let's say San Antonio and Milwaukee get involved with a Giannis deal, which right now to me seems like it should be the clear leader. I mean, the Spurs don't particularly need the number two pick, although they certainly could continue to build that way. But Milwaukee could use the number two pick. And so the idea of Giannis going to San Antonio, well, do the Blazers get involved where the Bucks are getting the number two pick, they're getting their picks back from the Blazers, and the Blazers are getting, you know, their pick of, you know, guys from the Spurs other than Victor Wembanyama. Like, I mean, could you get Castle in a deal like that? You know, that's where it gets really kind of intriguing for the Blazers, where it's not the, hey, we're going to go get Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. We are going to go get somebody young and on the upswing from another team that is making the big swing trade.
Who do you want them to take at 11?
Ooh, mock season or a mock time.
The answer is that I have zero clue. I have not looked closely enough at it. Although because I was on the Columbia River fishing for salmon yesterday, as we were anticipating this lottery and kicking around different ideas, I was joking that, you know, with the number 10 pick in the draft, the Blazers select from Lynn Benton Community College. It is a platitude. It is a bit of a cliche. It is a bit of, you know, self-preservation from executives, but there are good players, you know, throughout the draft, and there are good players at 11. I don't know that I've been blown away by the Blazers player evaluation in drafts. Like, I don't know that they've been great in the draft. With Chris Murray was at what, 21? I don't think it looks like Chris Murray's going to pan out. They're second round picks. You know, second round picks are a bit of a shot in the dark, but, you know, they haven't really panned out either. Their best players are guys they did not draft in Tumani Kamara and Denny Advia. So I'm not yet really sold on the Blazers' ability to go pick out the guy that maybe other teams aren't quite seeing at that 11 spot. But, you know, this is why they scout all year. This is why they have people working around the clock on this. And, you know, it's like anything else, it is an opportunity. I just remain to be convinced.
By the way, can you name the last number one pick to win the league MVP?
I was thinking about this, and then I pivoted because I didn't want to embarrass myself.
Has somebody done it since LeBron?
I was going to say, is it LeBron?
LeBron James.
LeBron James, yeah.
Yeah, that was as close as I was going to get, I think, because Embiid was not the number one pick. So,
2013.
Been a while. So Bill Orem will tell you might find some value at 11. We'll see how it all shakes out. There's certainly a lot of questions to be answered this offseason. Hopefully next time you're successful in catching a fish, give him a follow on Twitter, at Bill Orem, columnist for the Oregonians on Blue Sky, OregonLive.com.
I thought he'd be good at fishing. He's from Tillamook.
Look, just because you can't catch a fish doesn't mean you're not good at fishing.
No,
I mean,
no,
yeah.
The river, this was not me.
The river's flowing well, I heard.
The river was up 2 feet yesterday morning.
That sounds good.
This is not me.
I don't know.
Currents are all over the map. We don't know which direction they're going.
Might be a fake Tillamook guy.
There's a lot going on out here.
Not a fish from Tillamook.
I think you should take him out.
It's all a metaphor for the Blazers offseason. Currents going in different directions. Nobody knows what way it's going. Nobody knows where the trophy, the real trophies are. But I do want everybody to know, if you doubt that there's real value at number 11, I think your audience deserves to know that I was actually your guys' 11th pick to come on at 8 a.m. this morning.
You're right.
Yes. I don't know. Yeah. I think I've delivered.
Yeah, he did. He always delivers. Bill Orem, that's his tagline, always delivers. Thanks, as always, for delivering, and we'll do it again soon.
I hope so. Talk to you guys.